Talking with TD.
Touchdown Tennessee.
The latest on the Two-Tone Blue with ESPN's Teron Davenport.
Put up a shut up, Teron.
This is Nashville's best sports talk.
ESPN
102.5 The Game.
Here we go. Yes, yes, that's right. You are now talking with TD. Appreciate everyone tuning in. Once again, we got Elijah Campbell making it happen, hitting these switches, making this thing sound the way it should in your ear. Be sure to check us out, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iTunes, anywhere you get fine listening on your podcast. Check us out, Talking with TD, rate, review, subscribe first. We appreciate you. It's time to get into a few things. So we're going to give you a double dose of Run TMC. I want to go over just the three biggest stories coming out of minicamp and OTAs with Chris Sanders. So we'll do that. One of the stories actually is something I'm going to open up with, and that's the Jeffrey Simmons situation. And I think, you know, when you look at that, Jeffrey Simmons is a guy that has proven himself to be the most disruptive player on this Titans offense, or defense rather, excuse me. I think when you look at Jeffrey Simmons and some of the things he wants to do, and I mentioned offense because I had offense in mind, because Simmons wants to become more of a turnover machine. He likes generating the sacks. That's something he wants to do, but he wants to turn those sacks into strip sacks. He wants to impact the quarterback a little bit more, and I think that's going to really elevate him, not to that Aaron Donald status, because I don't care who you are, you're not getting there. But that's going to cement him. If he's able to create more turnovers, strip sacks, and those type of things, it's going to lead to more offense. That's why I had offense on my mind. And that's something, you know, more opportunities for the offense. And we'll get into, you know, some of the storylines out of minicamp relating to the offense in the next segment with Chris Sanders. But I just think when you look at Jeffrey Simmons, it's a really positive thing that he was there for the start of minicamp. And I'm not too concerned about him not being on the field. Yeah, he and Mike Vrabel and Todd Torricelli, they came together and they worked some things out to where, you know, he didn't have to go on the field. I think getting the conditioning is a positive thing. I think getting the field work, or rather the film work, and figuring out ways that he can improve his game is a positive thing. And that's what he and Terrell Williams, that's what they're doing, the defensive line coach. So for Simmons, right, you look at last year, 8.5 sacks. And, you know, Aaron Donald signed a big contract, right? He signed a big contract. That kind of set the tone for defensive tackles, interior guys. Now, remember, they use Aaron Donald on the outside as well. Jeffrey Simmons gets used on the outside as well. So I want to just look at just like the beginning of their career, right? Because that's, again, this isn't really to compare them, but this is to kind of like place a value on Jeffrey Simmons, right? So Aaron Donald came into the league. He had 9 sacks. The following year, 2015, he had 11, and then he had 8. So in his first 3 years, this guy had 28 sacks. Now, in Simmons, in his first 3 years, he has 13.5 sacks. But the thing is, you have to look at the trajectory of Aaron Donald's career, right? He signed the deal, then he gets you 20.5 sacks, 12.5 sacks, 13.5 sacks, 12 sacks. The Rams were able to get him signed and locked up before he really took off. And I think that's what the Titans could do if they decide to sign him now. Now, I'm not so sure. I don't believe a deal actually gets done this year, right? But before everything gets going, free agency and all of that next year, I think a deal gets done. That's my opinion. But the thing is, if you get ahead of the curve now, you could get somewhat of a discount. But what would that deal look like? That's the question. Typically, when you look at defensive tackles, right, it's hard to get to that 4th or 5th year in a contract. So I'm going to say Jeffrey Simmons, He's now, how old is Simmons? I think he's 20. Let's see how old he is. Because you want to look at this from a few ways, right? For Jeffrey Simmons in his camp, and by the way, he's retained the walking business. Now, they also have Tyree Phillips from the Baltimore Ravens. They have D. Anderson, a receiver out of LSU by way of Alabama A&M. They have a few other players as well. But Paul D. Rozelle is the agent and really, really good dude. And then he also has Jason Hatcher, his uncle, who has trained him. Hatcher is a former Pro Bowl defensive tackle with the Dallas Cowboys. He spent some time with the Washington football team. Then they had the other name at that time. Andre Girard is actually another guy, Pro Bowler, five-time Pro Bowler, if I'm not mistaken, offensive lineman with the Cowboys. So he has pedigree just as far as, you know, people in the camp to as an advisory role. And then you got Paul D. Rozelle as his agent, the walking business. Those are the guys that are going to take care of his contract. I thought it was pretty cool with Simmons where he said that he didn't want to have any conversations about the contract. He wants to focus on football. That's the way you want to do it. Because here's what happens. You ball out, the money's going to come. So keep that in mind. But at 24 years old, that's how old Jeffrey Simmons is now. His birthday is July 28th, so he'll turn 25. He'll be 25 years old entering next season. And I think that's the time where a 3 or 4 year deal is probably the way I would go, right? So let's say it is a 3 year extension, so to speak. That'll put him at 28, 29. When it's time to get another crack at the apple, which is perfect. You know, when you look at someone like Jeffrey Simmons, right? A guy whose career is just steadily trending upwards. So a 3 year deal is probably, let's go 3 years. I'm going to go 4 years. So I think it would be a 4 year deal. It's probably going to need to approach $100 million, anywhere from $95 to $100 million. Right, so now you have your average of $25 million. Now, as with most contracts, the back end of it, that begins to be funny money. So that's stuff that you could tweak and redo. But a four-year deal in the $100 million range, that gives you a $25 million average, which is pretty solid considering, you know, Aaron Donald's average is right around 30, right? So that puts him – let's look at that real quick. Defensive lineman – contracts. So we'll look at that and just see, you know, how the averages end up. You know, a few names here. Kenny Clark is a guy at 17.5 with the Packers. There's other things I want to look at with this contract also, but average is always interesting. You know, when you get that in there with new money, so to speak, and you want to just see just how that works and how the average falls into there. And we're going to funnel this into defensive tackles as opposed to, because you got Myles Garrett and Max Crosby in there, you know, as guys that are at 25 and $23.5 million. So put it this way, you get Jeffrey Simmons to 25, a 4 year $100 million deal that puts him at $25 million. Aaron Donald, his average salary is 31.6. We know that Aaron Donald is a different creature, right, as far as interior guys are concerned. Each guy has their own way of impacting the game. But I think if you put Simmons, you could tuck him securely between DeForest Buckner at $21 million and Aaron Donald at $31 million average. Now, keep in mind, Buckner's deal was 2 years ago. Yesterday's price is not today's price. So $25 million is right. Now, when I look at the guarantee, that's where it really gets interesting because – you know, you got Aaron Donald, who has $95 million guaranteed. You have DeForest Buckner, 2 years ago, $44 million guaranteed. You have Chris Jones a couple years ago as well, a few years ago, 3 years ago, if I'm not mistaken, $60 million guaranteed. And then you have Leonard Williams, $45 million guaranteed. I think when you look at Jeffrey Simmons, he's very much within that neighborhood. This is something, in my opinion, 50 to 60 guaranteed is where that needs to be the floor. So looking at that, a four-year, $100 million deal in the $60 million range guaranteed, that's where I think this deal should come in. And, again, that's not going to be till next year. So you're going to also have a number for Quinnen Williams, right? With the Jets, he's going to be eligible for a new contract as well. So it's going to be interesting watching how that played out. I do like some of the things that Jeffrey Simmons has done just as far as changing his body. He told me that he's down to the 295 range. He plans to play right around 295 to 300. Some diet changes, right? A couple years ago, he told me he gave up Doritos and snacks. He's a crawfish connoisseur, so he still eats that, but mostly like fish and chicken. That's a good thing to get the diet right as a big man, you know what I mean? And he's working on getting that first step more explosive, making his footwork quicker. These are all ways to get to the quarterback a little bit sooner and possibly turn a sack into a strip sack. So I wanted to get into Jeffrey Simmons a little bit. Again, you look at the career trajectory. It's not the same as Aaron Donald, because Aaron Donald, like, kind of he hit the scene playing, like, ridiculous football. Now, Jeffrey Simmons, he did the same thing as far as playing ridiculous football early. You remember what he did to Quentin Nelson in that Colts game. Then you look at, going against Marshall Yanda. And some of the things that, like Donald, some of the things that Simmons does, it doesn't always show up in the stat sheet, right? Like when you forklift an offensive lineman into Josh Allen and making it so that he's not able to get that late first down. When you're matching hands with the quarterback to deflect the pass. I think he had 9 passes deflected last year, but you're deflecting the pass and it leads to an interception. When you're getting pressure, bull rushing the offensive lineman, the guard or center, whoever it may be, into the quarterback and making him throw, make an errant throw. That's impacting the quarterback and leading to interception. So there's some things that Simmons does, like Aaron Donald, that don't measure in the stat sheet for him personally, but it equals wins. So that's something to keep in mind. I wanted to just get into the Simmons issue off the bat. I think this is something the Titans absolutely have to do. They can't have a redo of the A.J. Brown situation. So that's my take on Jeffrey Simmons. We're going to go ahead and go to a break. We'll be right back. Double dose, Run TMC.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
Music fades, the lights dim. Oh, here it comes. Bring it on in. And now, starting at small forward, your Atlanta Hawks, Antoine Carr.
And now, your number one singer singing Caribbean Queen, Billy Ocean. Caribbean Queen, Billy Ocean. You remember that, man? What's going on with you?
You had to take me back like that.
You just still chewing
funny,
on that?
Man. Yeah, man. I'm still marinating on that one. You messed me up with that.
Hey, that's the first time I ever stumped you, man. I mean, I said a while ago, but it just came to me because, man, I was like, man, you know, TD don't look like Sam Cassell. He looked more like Billy Ocean. So I started, putting on my playlist Caribbean Queen. So that's why I thought about you, man.
That's funny. That is funny. Well, I mean, it's the off season. There's a lot to recover from and look forward to. So we're going to do more of these type of segments with lists and things like that. I think it's really good now that minicamp has wrapped up. I mean, I have my idea of the three biggest things. I'm sure you have your idea. So we're going to shoot from the hip and we'll go one for one and share our biggest stories from minicamp and OTAs, and I'll let you go ahead and kick it off.
All right, man. You, the one that, that's really been intriguing to me, and nobody's really talking about it, is about how Tannehill handled adversity. I thought it was beautiful. I know when he came in and everybody was mad because he didn't show up at OTAs and everybody was upset with him and, you know, saying he doesn't know his players, didn't call Treylon Burks and all these things. But watching him interact with the rookies, watching him leading in the huddle and also just making plays and building camaraderie with his teammates, I think Tannehill's going to have a special year because he handled the adversity. He could have sat there and pout, but it intrigues me by how he handled it. That's what I love about Tannehill.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. That's a really good topic. And, you know, the thing is that I liked is he was a leader to the quarterback room. He was a leader.
Absolutely.
Listen, let me tell you, man, watching, like, install period,
mm-hmm.
You know, they would go through different route combos and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then you would see him, like, demonstrate to the receivers how he wanted them to move at the top of the route.
Wow.
You know, and you would hear him tell them, okay, look, typically in this situation, cover two, the safety's going to be here. The DB is going to play you here, and you're going to want to give him a little something. And then, you know what I mean? I was like, this is the type of thing that I really – like from Tannehill. It's something that I picked up before. But
absolutely.
That's a great point that you make.
Yeah, but you know what's so cool is I think, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, TD, I think what he said about the quarterback, Malik Willis, when they asked him about him not being a mentor, his job is to come in and win games, I think that was kind of taken out of context. And even though I took it out of context, I was like, man, how dare him say that? He's supposed to believe all that stuff that I was thinking in my mind, but I think he was thinking something different to where, you know what, even though I said that, I didn't mean it that way, because how can I come in here and be the leader of this team, the leader of the offense, the leader in the meeting room, and the leader of these receivers, and not communicate with them?
Yeah.
So as I sat back and fell back and was like, okay, let me take a better look at this. You know, even though he said those quotes, but what was he really saying? Because if he really meant that, he wouldn't be saying what he was doing, like kind of like what you're talking about.
Yeah. No, that was a really good thing to see that. For me, you know, I'm going to start off – we'll start off on the same side of the ball. You mentioned his name. And I think, in my opinion, actually, I did a hit for SportsCenter AM, and they asked me to just kind of give a little background and just what's the biggest story. And the biggest story for me, the wide receiver position. I feel like all eyes are going to be on the receiver position rolling into training camp. All eyes, in my opinion, were on them in minicamp and OTAs, and I specifically honed in on Robert Woods and Treylon Burks, and two different reasons, right? It's really interesting how Burks is what you could call behind schedule, right? Because he struggled a bit, wasn't available for minicamp. He had the asthma complications. Rob Moore did say that he's in the classroom, absorbing all of the install and everything, responding well to what they're asking him to do. He did get on the stationary bike to get some conditioning work during minicamp. Saw him outside doing that in the heat, so that's a positive thing. Mm-hmm. But he wasn't on the field. And that's, to me, a little bit behind, because you need to be on the field for minicamp, to start off.
And when you're looking at all his receivers, and we talked a little bit about this off the air, you know, we have all these guys. Don't forget about Kenzie. We got Dez Fitzpatrick. We got Josh Malone. We got all his receivers. As you've been in practice, you know, who's really standing out? Who can jockey the position to be one of those top four or five receivers to actually play on Sunday?
Well, I think when you look at what's left after Woods and Burks, and Josh Malone stood out the most to me.
Mm.
And he's an interesting player in this whole conversation, because in the past, apparently special teams in Cincinnati, you know, that was something that kind of was a hiccup for him, and it was a reason why he wasn't able to stick on the roster.
Mm-hmm.
That's me outside looking in from, you know, what I've been told. So naturally, I went to him and said, hey, man, what's up with special teams? Like, you're making plays out there, and it's really good that you're doing that, but what's up with special teams? You know, in your position, that's going to be your meal ticket to making the roster.
Absolutely.
And he said he went to Craig Aukerman and told him, the special teams coach, who who Jared Stillman once fired.
Every other week?
Yeah. He told him that he would do whatever it takes, whether it's returning, wow, being a gunner, anything, wherever you want to put me, I would do that. And I lit up at that because that showed me that he's open to, hey, look, man, to get where others don't, you got to do what others won't.
Right.
And that's what he's doing. So I think that should open up. But just getting back to this receiver thing, as far as my biggest story, Robert Woods, on the other hand, is ahead of schedule.
That's awesome, man.
Because you saw him on the field. I'm talking about OTAs. As soon as field work started on OTAs, he was on the field. Yes, he has the brace on the left knee. Yes, he struggles a bit, you know, when they do the box drills and cone drills to cut off of that left knee. But the fact of the matter is he tore his ACL in November.
That's
December, January, February, March, April, May. 6 months
That's
later,
crazy.
This man is on the field doing football movements and taking part in team and 7-on-7 period.
That's crazy.
That, in my opinion, is ahead of schedule, right?
Yeah.
So those two receivers, for two different reasons, are the biggest story for me, and especially with both of them being heavily relied upon, and I haven't mentioned his name in a while, so heavily relied upon to replace A.J. Brown.
Yeah, I mean, hey, even with Woods, man, I mean, just like you said, you know, he may not be up, you know, 100%, but he has a Vrabel mentality. And when I say a Mike Vrabel mentality, is that he's mentally tough. I mean, just like when you talked about he got hurt in November, the 10th game of the season, and he's out there running routes and doing 7-on-7, running team. It just shows you he has a mentality to want to win, and he's mentally tough. So I'm telling you, that's a great asset for the Tennessee Titans, man.
Yeah, definitely a great asset. So that's my top story. We'll move it on to number two. What's your next big story?
I'm going to skip the Burks. I'm going to say Burks will be number three, and I kind of give, you know, I kind of jumped the gun. But my second is what Chig is doing. Ah, he is a dog, man. You know, we talked about a little bit, you know, before we got on the phone, of how he got three touchdowns, you know, in the red zone. I mean, that's huge, because when you're catching three touchdowns in the red zone, what does that mean? That means when the game's on the line, when it's in tough situations, the quarterback is coming to you and he can trust you. That is ginormous, because, you know, the last couple of years, everybody was saying, well, how are we going to replace Delanie Walker? How are we going to replace Jonnu Smith? We don't have any tight ends. Now you got a cat from Maryland who's big, physical, and also he's got a little shiftiness in running the routes. He just made this Tennessee Titans offense better. Why? Because he opposes a threat on offense.
Low-key, he's a huge addition. Low-key, low-key. And last year I called it Elijah Molden was going to be the biggest impact draft guy, you know, from that year, and he was. I think Chig is going to be, I don't know about the biggest, but it's because it's going to be a battle between he and Burks, but I think Chig has the potential to be a biggest. And I love the fact that you mentioned – in the red zone. And he actually had four, right? Because he caught three from Tannehill, one from Logan Woodside. And one of them was really interesting because he was able to play through contact. He had kind of like a crossing route. There was a little bit of contact with the safety. I don't remember who it was, but he broke the route off and the quarterback rolled out. It was Tannehill. Tannehill rolled to his right and Chig just rolled right with him. Because everything else was, you know, all the other coverage was real sticky icky.
Absolutely.
And Tannehill rolled to buy a little bit of time, and he threw it to Chig, who was able to uncover. I thought that was really good, just for the rookie to be on the same page with the veteran quarterback. And again, three of those red zone passes, the touchdowns, were from Tannehill. And on another one, he had a diving one in the corner of the end zone. Tannehill to Jonnu Smith. The last year, eight red zone touchdowns, right? Tannehill, when I asked him about Chig at the first availability in OTAs, he lit up. Take notice. That's going to be a connection. That is going. And Austin Hooper, too. Austin Hooper as well
absolutely.
Is a guy that got a little sauce on top of his routes, too. He's actually – both of those guys are here in town at Vanderbilt, tight end U. I wasn't able to get access to it, man. I wish I could have. I had access to it last year. Hooper was here last year. I was over at, I think, Lipscomb Academy. But anyhow, those guys are remaining in town and working. Chig told me he's going to be in Atlanta working out. and getting things, getting right and everything. He's a guy I can't wait to see in camp. So I love that you mentioned that story.
But here's the thing. I mean, look at Todd Downing. Should be smiled from teeth to teeth or cheek to cheek, whatever. Is because you can do so many things with those guys. We talked about it before. Didn't go 13 personnel, you know, burst those guys out and go empty. So what do you do? What does the defense do to try to stop two, you know, big-time tight ends that actually run like wide receivers? I mean, it opposes so many things. It opposes a threat to where you get the ball in those guys' hands. Those guys are good after the yards after the catch, and these guys got a little wiggle to create separation.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So that's a – that's a really good storyline that you brought up there. For me, number two, I mean, he led off this whole segment, right? This is Derrick Henry. And I'm talking about TD. It's Derrick Henry. And just the fact that he's back.
What?
And, you know, there was some question about whether or not he was going to be there for the start of mandatory minicamp. I didn't really have any question about that because, you know, just knowing how Derrick Henry is and his work ethic.
Right.
He wasn't going to miss that. And you knew he was going to be ready. But the thing is with him, he looks a little bit bigger.
Dude,
that's the thing that's crazy. As Malik Willis said, man, that's a big human. That's what Malik Willis said. And I don't disagree. But here's the deal, though. First day of practice, and I'm talking about mini camp. Like, we're not talking about during the season. We're not talking about training camp. Mini camp. During downtime, when everyone's working on special teams, he's right back to the routine that he had during the season. He and Tony Dews running up and down the field every 5 yards, playing and working his way back to the ball and catching it. You know, he's just unnatural running routes, but it's still good to see him, you know, making those movements. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, Chris, check this out. Later on in practice, more downtime, conditioning work.
Wow.
Goes over to Frank Pirano. And I'll give Harold Landry credit too, because Harold Landry came over too. They're both doing conditioning work. And shout out to outside linebacker coach Ryan Crow as well, because he was doing conditioning too. So you got the coaches in there mixing it up. I forget the D line coach, the assistant D line coach, but he came over and did some too. But the fact of the matter is this: Derrick Henry is a guy that never even hints at being influenced by the outside noise, right?
Wow.
But he said the doubters or whatever they may be, we going to see. There's a different motivation with him. And I think that's a good thing. And he wants to show that he's back to normal, back to his pre-injury self. And it's just crazy to me that when you talk about the best backs in the league, he's not the first one mentioned anymore. It's Jonathan Taylor.
Right, that's crazy.
And look, much respect to Jonathan Taylor. But I still think Derrick Henry's the best pure running back in the league. And in my opinion, he's out to show that again. So that's the big story for me. And even there were times where they were taking reps. Young fella, here, scoot aside. Let me get one more. You know what I mean? So you're seeing that in minicamp. And then he didn't shoot down the possibility of playing in preseason games. So it's definitely a different approach.
This is Derrick Henry. You're now talking with TD.
So Chris and I gave a couple parts of our stories there, the big storylines come out of minicamp. We're going to finish it up here with this final segment, and I think when you look at this, it's really interesting. Chris, what's your other big storyline?
But here's my three. It's funny because I was just thinking about it. I was going to talk about, you know, Burks being my number three, but that everybody knows that. But here's what I came away with, Cam. Is who's going to win that starter position at cornerback? You got Caleb Farley and you got McCrary from Auburn. Who's going to take reins and be that cornerback that can shut down a receiver? That's going to be an interesting matchup to see who's going to take that spot. I was just thinking about that. I was going to say Burks. Everybody knows Burks. Everybody knows the situation. But that cornerback situation, if I know, you know, Caleb Farley has been doing great and working out and doing the things that he's supposed to be, but then you got a guy coming from Auburn, McCrary, that's physical. His arms might not be that long, but he's still going to try to choke you in your mustache, and he's aggressive, physical, all those things that you want for a corner to be. Who's going to step up and win that position?
Yeah, Yeah, I could definitely hear what you're saying, but I think that's Farley's position. Look, McQuarrie's going to play. They love the competitiveness that he brings. You know, Anthony Midget, the DB coach, I was talking to him a little bit, and this is something that they really love about that DB room is the fact that they have the versatility they have, right? From Christian Fulton all the way to Chris Jackson, right?
100%.
All of those guys could play inside and outside. Now, listen, I wouldn't put Elijah Molden on the outside frequently, but if it called for him to go on the outside and match up with a tight end, I would do it, right? But Buster Skrine, Roger McCreary, Caleb Farley, Christian Fulton, Chris Jackson, these guys could all play inside and outside, and that's the value that McCreary brings. But Coach Midget said that he was really excited about the competitiveness, the physicality, and it's pretty cool because, you know, with Farley and Fulton having the yellow jersey on, those guys kind of stepped aside during 7-on-7, especially like low red zone. And, you know, low red zone, like, you know, that's a tough area for the offense. And you got a whole bunch of things going on, route combos and everything, because it's a small area, so you got to do what you can to scheme guys open. McQuarrie was real sticky. And he was reaching in there with those 29-inch arms and punching things out. You know what I mean? So it's going to be interesting watching that. But I will say this about Farley. Farley has gained. He gained a little bit of weight. I watched him. He has the brace on. I think it's the left knee as well. But I watched him just like in those, you know, click and close drills that they do in individual period. And he looks good. He looks good. I just hope that he doesn't fall back to that baseball turn, which is what he was doing in camp so much. And I remember pulling him aside and talking to him about that, you know, about the baseball turn. And because he always wanted to, like, I liken him to a horse, right? Like a wild horse that just wants to get out in the open field and run. Like, he wants you to run go routes against him. You know what I mean? Because he wants to show that he can run. Nah, not everybody's going to do that. As you say,
they're going
to
stop on a dime.
You sell the nine, right? And they would sell that to him and break it down, and he would have the baseball turn, you know, sometimes and things like that. And you lose timing with that, especially like on the slant, you know what I mean? When they give him those couple steps to the outside and then bring it back inside, he tried a baseball turn, and he's able to use his length sometimes to get his hand in there. But, you know, you want to be able to just adjust with it and not have to turn your back to the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, but see, the thing about it is when you have that baseball turn, as I'm a wide receiver, I'm going to attack your blind spot. And the thing about it is, as a cornerback, you want to feel the receiver. When you do that baseball turn, and if I'm a receiver and I attack your blind spot, you can't feel me. Yeah. And in this league, these guys start and stop at the drop of a dime. So if these guys attack his blind spot and they stop on dime, come out, run a comeback or whatever they run, then that's where he can get in trouble. I understand you want to run through the baseball turn and everything like that, but when a wide receiver attacks your blind spot, and you try to do that baseball turn, it's gonna be curtains if you do that.
Yeah, and I told him, I said, look, man, you know, he makes that outside move, and you want to turn. Okay, you can open your hips a little bit, but shoot your inside hand at that inside shoulder. Right, because you know he's going to make that outside move, and then he's going to start coming back inside. Hit that shoulder. Hit that inside shoulder. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And that's with the length that he has, that's, you know, that's something he could do.
Come on, coach.
Hey, man, you know, I laced him up a time or two.
I knew you looked like Nolan Richardson, man. I knew you was a coach.
Nolan Richardson, huh? That's a darn shame. Well, my third my third topic, and I talked about him in the intro.
Yeah.
Jeffrey Simmons. And
I
think that's another case where having him there is a positive thing. It was a big story, obviously, with him not being on the football field. But, frankly, why does he need to be out there? You know
100%.
What I mean? He did his conditioning. He's getting his film work in. This dude's going to get paid.
Okay,
and I just think just him being in camp alone is a big story, because there were some legitimate questions about whether or not, you know, especially after everything broke down with A.J. Brown.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well, absolutely.
So at that point, like, you can't put anything past him, because who would have thought that a trade would be demanded or that situation would even work out the way it did. I know I did.
I know.
And you know, I'm pretty close to AJ, but I mean, it is what it is. So getting Simmons there, like, that's a step in a positive direction for this team, maintaining their defensive cornerstone. That's a big story, in my opinion.
Yeah, and we got to understand it's a business. And it's not that, you know, I think sometimes some people outside looking in is, oh, he's being selfish and he just wants to, you know, wants to be paid. No, that's not the issue. It's about making sure it benefits both sides. Yes, you get paid, but also it helps, you know, the Tennessee Titans because you have a premier, you know, D tackle. So, you know, it's just that we just got to sit back and let the contract unfold and everything work out and everybody be happy. Because there's no way that the Tennessee Titans, number one, will let him walk. Number two, you know, that they wouldn't sign him and lock him up because he is one of the best defensive players in the entire league.
Yeah, and I think both parties understand
absolutely
what's at stake, and they'll work it out. He did retain, as I mentioned in the opening segment, he did retain agents. It's called Walking Business, and his uncle, Jason Hatcher, and then also Andre Girard, both former Cowboys. Mm-hmm. Girard is probably familiar, a name you know, from the Albert Haynesworth incident. He was the guy that Haynesworth got upset with, and we'll just leave out what happened.
Yeah.
But those guys are helping. Then Paul D. Rozelle is his agent.
Okay.
You know, a young brother, you know, he served on the NFL. He helped the NFLPA in the with the CBA that was passed in 2020. So I got into that a little bit as well. But, yeah, man, it's a good situation for Jeffrey Simmons, and I think they're going to get that thing worked out.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, I think he has to be a Titan for quite some time.
Hey, man, before we go, man, you know, I went to the mall the other day. You know, I do a little shopping. And he was like, man, you on that show with TD? I'm like, yeah. He's like, man, does he look like Sam Cassell or John Chaney from Temple? I'm like, man, I don't know. Let me put both the three pictures up there. And I pointed out Sam Cassell, and they're like, 100%.
I'm glad you didn't say John Chaney. But when you said his name, all I thought of was when he went after John Calipari. He was like, I'll kill you.
How do you say it?
I'll kill you. Yo, you don't remember that press conference?
Yeah, I don't remember it. That's it.
I was like, yo, that was UMass beat Temple. You. Marcus Camby and them, Lou Rowe.
I know.
They beat Aaron McKee, Eddie Jones and those guys, man. He said, oh, you damn fool, I'll kill you. Boy, they don't tell him what's going to come out with this dog episode. Boy, I tell you what.
Man. Oh, man, you're my hero, man. I appreciate you, TD.
Yeah, man, lots of fun, man. I'll holler at you. So that was a double dose of Run TMC right there, man. Gave you a little Derrick Henry, a little everything, man. Always good times busting it up with Chris Sanders, forever Titans receiver. Hey, we were going to skip this week, but we managed to still get it. We were going to take a break, but appreciate each one of you for tuning in anyway, coming back. We will take a break at some point. We'll be back next week. A little news to announce next week, so stay tuned to what we got. But the show is going to keep moving. Again, thanks for tuning in. God bless. Good night.